Missed the latest episode of your favorite CJSW 90.9 program? Listen back to the podcast versions by going to our website or by checking out our brand new CJSW app, available to download now from the App Store or Google Play.
You're listening to The Drop and the Turning, a podcast about music, place, and change. My name is Rebecca Bruton. What you'll hear today is my interview with Shen Ye, a Toronto-based artist who works across various art, music, design, and technology contexts. Their work coheres around hacking-informed noisemaking, the erratum, and the untranslatable. They work with more than human agencies to construct multi-sensory networked experiences, synthesizing language, code, sound, body, image, data, light, and time. Shen and I spoke in October of 2022.
Okay. My name is Shen Ye. Ye Shen, as in Chinese. I'm currently, at this moment, speaking from my home in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. In terms of where I call home, it's a very hard to answer question for me. I could unfold that like for days. And in terms of my practice, I work across art, music, and technology. I make installations and performances that mix a lot of different media. That's a very brief description of what I do.
Providing some context on the podcast, I started it because I really wanted to talk to artists and feature artists who were in some way working with ecological philosophy and ecological practice, and couched within that right now is a lot of language around post-humanism and more than human, the idea of the more than human. So even though when I research your practice, I don't find you explicitly referring to ecological philosophy, I'm really interested in your ways of working with technologies and technologies as systems, and also how you think about that which is more than human. So I'd like to start with the question of, what does more than human mean to you right now in your current practice today?
I guess I refer to the term more than human in my artist statement, or even when I try to explain my practice in written words, I use that word. To me, it kind of has two layers of meanings to me. One, the reason I chose to use modern human instead of non-human, because I don't think they are completely interchangeable. With the term non-human, I find it addressing, you know, the binary or the dichotomy between human and what's considered not human. And that's kind of, not fitting in my worldview. And with the word modern human, yes, I do think it include what traditionally is considered as non-human, but also it includes human as well. And another, to think about it from another perspective, is I kind of think about it as more than individuals. So I really like the word more in this term, as in it suggests this plurality, and it's, for example, the internet, it is more than human to me, and it's such a broad, or we can think of it as a hyper objective idea, which is beyond what we can grasp on the individual level, because it involves infrastructures, which is totally related to the ecosystems. And it also involves software, which are almost abstract and almost invisible. But it also involves users or individual nodes that activates the net. So to me, more than human really suggests this idea of connectedness and being plural. That's the two points about more than human I found interesting and resonant with.
That's super interesting. And I think connected to that question and also your response on that, my next question is, could you describe any moment in your life, whether it's the first time or a time today, when you felt a deep sense of connection to a space, place, or environment that you perceived of as being more than human?
To be honest, I feel like that will be, again, like plural. Like, I feel like that's how I see every moment in life. Because, for example, just like when I'm alone, even when I'm alone at home, I always felt the presence of the environment, because there's another realm about more than human. To me is the spectral. There's this term I learned from Buddhism that I find fit in, which is the sentient being. So I always find myself not alone, even though I am alone, I always feel presence of some other beings in the air. Not to be spooky. It could mean, you know, I pay attention to, you know, the sounds in the environment, which is, you know, it's never silent. And I guess that's when the moments when I'm just being, but then when it's in day-to-day life, like, you know, just getting connected online, the fact of that, or my online existence, to me it's also a very strong presence, more than human presence to me.
So what you're describing, I think I would contextualize it as a kind of mystical or almost an animist experience of the world around you. And I have also noticed that in some of the writings on your works, including articles I've read and your own descriptions of your work, of what your work is, I noticed the term mysticism. I can't remember exactly where I saw that. And then I also read the phrase sorceress technologies. And I was really excited by that idea. And I'm wondering if you can talk about why you might use terms such as the term mystical or the term sorceress when referring to your relationship with technological collaboration.
I think the mystical, it's from this show, group show I was in, which is called Techno-Mysticism, which it's totally something I'm drawn to. I do use sorceress, this word, when I try to describe my relationship to technology. I think this kind of, you know, it's, if I need to dig deeper, it goes back to why or when I started making art. My first expressive or artistic medium, it's sound. I was trained on classical piano since I was five. And even though when I was younger, I didn't have this worldview that instruments as technology. But later on, because, you know, I'm also a practicing software engineer, and that experience kind of fits into my worldview. To a point, I think by now, how I think about technology is really in a broader sense, as in something you, technology as a media, as a medium itself. And when we talk about medium, you know, one of the literal meaning is, you know, this kind of channel that, a sorcerer, is, you know, the existence of a medium, the person who channels through certain energy, certain message, certain information. So yeah, I totally think technology is some sort of medium together with my own existence that could transcend certain I was gonna say message, but message is too clear, but it could be just some sort of energy. Yeah, it could be chaos, it could be clear message. But yeah.
Could you give an example of how this way of thinking about technology shows up in the work that you create?
Yeah, I guess right. I feel like I kind of see that in most of my work. A very simple work example is I've been really fond of making Twitter bots or bot, which essentially is automated script or sets of instructions that are coded for the machine to execute. And by making bots, which usually I use it to work with certain online database, it always generate results that I would never imagine if I didn't use or work with this medium. And what's really interesting to me in that kind of process is because bots are not naturally born, like me as human has to kind of initiate it and then kind of code the instructions. But I try, like, I've been learning how to not see myself as the administrator, but more like a collaborator. And that whole process is a dynamic feedback loop. When maybe I had a thought in mind and coded something, but and the result it brings about is, feeds back to how I might revise it or think otherwise. And I guess at that moment of like making and having the output or the end work, itself is transcendental for me. To make it more concrete, one of the Twitter bot I made was all the Twitter bots I have made are working with texts or more specifically English words. And I found that the poetry behind these unexpected automation, it's really amazing and really really guides me or the viewers to a world that's not something I would have imagined. In that sense, it's word is also a technology, or text, in this kind of practice.
This restoration is impossible.
You opened by referring to the idea of sentience all around you, and I also like the idea of words themselves taking on a kind of fluid animacy in this work, in this approach.
That's very beautifully summarized.
One of the questions that I had prepared in advance was around how you create this work that, from what I can understand of it, pushes against the idea of expressivity. It's not about expressing something, it's about engaging with something. And this word sorcery is interesting, I think, of divining a kind of system. And what I was going to ask was, what is your relationship then with your voice, which can be such a personal artistic form? But then what I'm hearing is, in the way that you describe your work, is it's not expressive in the traditional sense, but it does feel very personal and very intimate, the ways that you engage with these technologies. There's this sense in hearing you talk about it of this very intense personal relationship that's quite beautiful. So I feel like maybe the question in there is simply, where does your own physical human voice then fit within these systems? And a second thought on that is, do you feel like the systems that you generate or collaborate with are then taking you and also collaborating back with you?
I would say, to answer the question, the letter question, is I think in a more romantic, from a more romantic perspective, I would think that it's a mutual agency, meaning that the machinic bodies also work with me, but the rational side of me would argue that because the machinic bodies are coded and there has to be an initiator, in the world of computer programming or the internet, that role will be an administrator who has the root access to everything. I think this question is, you just asked, is something I've been experimenting. I've been trying to see through myself as well. I think it's actually a very, very key motivation into my practice is where do I see my voice and to what extent. It's sometimes actually, yeah, sometimes I think about it as a pot, going back to the mysticism idea, like, you know, there it's, you know, like how as if these are my voice is an ingredient, the code is an ingredient, and how to what percentage of them, and then we put it in a pot, and what will be almost like alchemy, like will be transformed into. And yeah, I don't have a firm or static answer to how I see my voice here. I feel like it has been, to be honest, has been transformed, transmuted through different scenario. And it is something I like to actually find, how to say it, not make peace with, but I do find there's this friction between, say, using my voice as the literal speaking voice, singing voice, as, you know, expressive, versus something that's commonly seen as cold, you know, like cold, or these like invisible or insensible forms. Yeah, I think that is exactly the question, or this myth in my own mind that I want to know. Yeah.
Do you feel an ethical obligation to the technologies you work with as sentient beings?
I think so. I think to me, yeah, I keep saying I don't like dichotomies, but I do have a very distinct rational side and a romantic side. I think a lot of time they don't make an agreement, as in, like, yes, I do feel if I see technology as sentient being, I do think I need to be take ethical practices, and at the same time, I don't want myself to fall in this trap of anthropomorphosis things, which I find it's a very dangerous tendency. But yeah, it's a compromise or a fight, even. I feel like my mind or my practice, I constantly engages.
Are there, I'm curious about, so you said that in your practice, one of the central questions is this question of collaboration, and in what ways are you giving and receiving in the materials that you work with? And I'm wondering if there's any artists or non-artists, but people who are doing something in the world with a similar approach to you, who you feel have succeeded in this, or who you feel might have might be inspirations around this way of working.
Yeah, there are quite a few artists. I don't know if they feel like they find the perfect recipe or formula, but there's this one artist, her name is Siwen Chang. She paints and collaborates with robotic arms that are equipped with artificial intelligence systems. Basically, her process is she will paint almost like improvised brush strokes that are, you know, not figurative. It's just purely abstract. And the robotic arm will sometimes try to mimic her, or sometimes not, just to just do its own thing. And I found this, her process or her entire practice in this way. It's like a very direct example of this type of human machine collaboration. That's super personal, super intimate, but also very careful, which I really appreciate. I think in my own work, I feel like I have a tendency of complicating things. So it might not be as direct or straightforward like her process. But yeah, like for example, the end result of her one, like a performance of live painting, at the end will be a painting, or will be forms, visual forms you will see. And the whole process, you can see it, which is live, right? Because the robot is also present. Yeah, I think with a lot of artists, the collaboration with the technology, it's usually hidden. It's usually behind the scene.
So I read in an interview with you from probably a couple of years ago now, after your album, your LP came out. Is it called She She or ZZ?
It's She She. Okay. It's in between the two. Yeah.
So after that LP came out, you had stated that that would be the last of that way of working, and that you were interested at that point in moving towards doing so-called proper songs. And I know in your recent work, It Takes Spirals to Feed the Spiral, that's very far from proper songs. It's quite different. And so I'm interested in whether that's something that you've pursued.
Yeah, I would say that was my genuine hope for myself, but I guess I haven't got there. with the spiral work, I guess it's more of a performance. That's why it's less song-like. But my goal at the time was I wanted to make albums or studio recordings of proper songs, which is, to be honest, my original practice in with sound or music. I was a singer songwriter for a long time, and I miss that form, I guess, format. With the spiral work, because the project kind of transformed dramatically from its original proposal or the original concept, because it was supposed to be a 12-channel sound installation that has nothing to do with voice. Well, it's about using brainwave signals as a sort of biofeedback. But then it's so interesting. It's just, you know, how life goes, how nobody predicted the pandemic. It was a pandemic project, and because of a lot of external factors, it just keeps transformed and into something I did or completed now. Now it's like it has so many components, like visuals, text, video, and my goal was to create a immersive environment for viewers to experience this kind of spiral-like repetition, or spiral-like spatial experience. And the sound element was actually I incorporated very last minute, because it's really funny that in my visual art practice, I don't think from the point of sound. So a lot of time, sound kind of functions like a supplement that I knew it would make the experience more, in this case, more immersive and more, what's the word? Yeah, I guess my goal was to penetrate this kind of conception of time and space through multiple senses. And that's how I made the composition in that work, which is not song-like, yes. However, I'm actually working on some songs now, not actively, it's those things you thought about something and then, yeah, like I actually have a full album of track titles, like song titles, but I don't have the songs yet.
That's amazing. So I think this will probably be my final question. I'm interested in the conceptual interrelation between a song and a work with a more fragmented subjectivity, but that still uses text. Do you know the philosopher Rosie Braidotti?
Not really.
She's often considered the inheritor or the primary inheritor of Donna Haraway's tradition, when Donna Haraway really branched out into interspecies relations, then Rosie Braidotti took up the cyborg philosophy and pushed it into this space of really questioning what is human subjectivity in a time when we are all cyborgs, and the internet is sort of its own collective subjectivity.
So
that's just something that I'm personally very interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested in this idea of what does the song mean? What does it do? Because a song, as we've come to understand it in popular culture, is so much about a unified subject expressing themselves, and then there's a part of me that feels like even though the song is the most prevalent musical practice, or maybe the most imperializing one, it also in a way is sort of, it has become its own fossil, because I think in some ways we have moved past that idea of what a human is or what a subjectivity is. And something that really inspires me in your work, not having actually been with your work in person, but just what I'm able to witness of it through my research on it and through videos of it, is the ways that I've seen you using text in these ways that feel very much like fragmented or collective subjectivities. The other word I've been thinking a lot about is multi-local, where there's a sense of a sentience occurring in at a lot of different points. So I'm interested in, then, given that you work so much with text in these more fragmented ways that are more these networks of meaningfulness, what then does a song mean to you?
I guess Yeah, I think there was a reason. Now I can't trace them back, I guess, why I'm into the fragmentation of a text. So far what I've been working on was with English. I think part of me is still now. I don't know. I have this intrinsic resistance to speak English properly. ever since I moved out of China. I guess at first I found myself, you know, in an environment where my broken English was like very obvious and sometimes self-conscious about it. But soon after, I kind of embraced it. And even when there's a chance, I don't correct myself. There's it's funny. Though I do have to spend money on something like Grammarly to help me with some professional context. With songs, I guess the format song, it's even more personal to me. I think it's, you know, like, again, back to how I started my artistic practice, or my creativity was first expressed through very formalized music, whether it be playing some, you know, classical music repertoire, or play acoustic guitar and sing folk songs. And at some point, and also pop music, like Mandarin pop, or, you know, even like, you know, R&B, and blues, all these type of genres, really. I won't say play an important role in my upbringing, but like, it's like, you know, those moments when you're sad, or when you're happy, and then you heard a song with some lyrics that are describing the emotions. I found it still this very empathetic form. So to answer your question, what song is to me is something that's can channel a more universal energy, and to in another sense more accessible. Because I for a long time I found when, you know, practicing this sort of, you know, what are called avant-garde or experimentalism, I found myself, or, you know, other folks who are doing that, is easily get lost in to these, I would say, technique of making the music, or technique of sounding. And But yeah, I think the most, I guess, to make it very straightforward, like I was saying, I used to sing like pop songs. Like I even competed in talent show, like that type of singing. One day, like not just one day, like even now, like my mom will sometimes ask me to cover some pop songs for her because she wants to hear my voice, but she cannot resonate, or she just cannot access the other kind of form of sound I make. And I find that fact, like just this kind of relationship, very, very interesting. And which I guess is the motivation behind why I want to make more formalized songs or music.
You've been listening to The Drop and the Turning, a podcast about music, place, and change, produced in partnership between Newark's Calgary and CJSW Campus and Community Radio. The work you've heard excerpted throughout the episode is Shunye's Uncertain Loop number 2019-0510.